This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual, with me in studio, my co-host, decked out in Toronto Maple Leaf regalia this morning, Naz Marchese.
Toronto Maple Leaf, Buffalo Bills, Alabama.
You got it and all the Raptors. And the Raptors. You got it all covered today, Naz.
Good morning, Wally.
Good morning, Naz. Joining us in studio this morning, former Toronto Maple Leaf, Washington Capitol. I think that's where he had the bulk of his really good years. Of course, I'm talking about Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Morning, gentlemen. It's been a long time.
Lou's back from summer hiatus. Lou, we missed you around here. Certainly thrilled to have you in this morning. We can get started on some topics that are near and dear. Just a little programming note coming up. Middle of the hour, the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, Joe Bowen. Guys, why don't we, since we got Lou in studio this morning and be substantial Leaf talk with Joe, a point that we always have fun with, and alluding to your Alabama paraphernalia this morning, Naz. Of course, we've got two Alabama guys in the studio, Naz and Lou, and I'm defending the honor of the Fighting Irish. Let's talk a little bit college football. I know when we get Joe on the line, we'll get him to talk about the Irish a little bit, but season so far, is it unfolding as you guys would have expected? It's always the same teams. College football in a lot of ways has become incredibly predictable. It's always the same teams there. It's Clemson, it's Alabama, it's Ohio State, it's LSU, it's Auburn, Oklahoma. The odd time the Irish throw themselves in the middle of the discussion, but nothing seems to have changed. Naz?
Yeah, so all has to do with recruiting, right? They're the number one schools, and they get the best players, and that's what happens. That's why the teams are the way they are.
Is that good or bad for college football? I mean, obviously, it seems to be good because there seems to be a huge interest. Ratings are probably up. You know, you go to one of these college football games, and it's an incredible experience. So certainly, from a fan point of view, it doesn't seem to hurt. But it's the same four, five, six teams, Lou.
It really is, and it's unfortunate, not really for me, because with me following Alabama, I follow them very well on the recruiting end of it. I know there's a lot of players out there that transfer, that more or less commit and decommit. Bama this weekend, or just in the last 10 days, had a decommitment from USC, that probably the top dual quarterback in high school, Bryce Young. He's going to go to Alabama. So it's more or less when Tua leaves, this kid's going to step in, and he's everything that everybody thought he was going to be. So it isn't, and it isn't. It's the kids where they want to play. They want to play on where they're going to be exposed. They want to play for a national championship game.
And
they want to go to the NFL.
I don't blame them, anymore,
right?
Quite frankly,
most of them are leaving after 3 years too.
You look at college football today. When I say today, like today, Sunday, September 29th or whatever it is today, four of the top six teams in the nation are out of the Southeast Conference: LSU, Auburn, Georgia, Alabama. You know, there used to be a day, the power now is in the southeast of the United States, yep. And Ohio State throws their hat in the ring every now and then. And that seems to about, you know, and of course we've got Clemson, of course, but that's literally, to me, it's almost close to being southeast United States. USC hasn't been a power in, what, 10 years?
Nope.
They used to be a power. They used to be a power. Texas used to be a power. It used to be more spread out.
Yeah. Stanford used to be a power.
Stanford used to be spread out. Penn State, Pitt, even Pittsburgh in the Tony Dorsett days. Yeah. I mean, but now it's all gotten concentrated down. And in the long term, is that good for college football in the States?
I really don't know if it is good for it. I guess as long as the ratings keep going up, it is going to be good for them. And it's really, it's a great job that the coaches are doing out there recruiting the kids and putting thoughts in the kids' heads that the best place to be is a school that they're coaching at. And this is the problem that Alabama's had, and I can only talk about them, is that every year, their coaches, they leave. It's one and done. You know, they go to other jobs. They go to head coaching jobs. They go to professional jobs up in the National Football League. So it's harder for the kids to get to know kids and or get to know the coaches. So the relationship between the coaches and players are very, very important right now. And if you have a stable force of coaches that are going to be there for a number of years, you're going to have a lot better chance like Clemson has. Because their offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator have been there for the last 5 or 6 years, and they've had lots of opportunities to leave, but they have a different atmosphere over there than Alabama. You know, Nick brings them in.
It's all about recruiting at the end of the day.
At the end of the day,
because
you know,
up until what's his Dabo Swinney? Is that his the coach Clemson? You know, Clemson was I wouldn't have considered them one of the elite of college football historically. I mean, they won a national championship, I think, in the early 80s. I think the fridge was there, right?
Not that year, but they did win it.
I can't remember. I think Georgia was in I'm confusing them with the early 80s Georgia team with Herschel Walker. But Clemson, to me, has not been historically one of the great college football programs, let's say 50, 60, 70 years, like Notre Dame is, like Alabama is, like USC is, like Texas is. But they managed to Dabo comes in and he turns a program completely around. And is that what college football is all about, Naz? Sometimes it's not just about it's all about recruiting.
It's about Saban.
It's about getting out there, and you know, you turn, and everybody wants to be part of a winning program.
Yeah, the one thing I don't like is the blowouts. There's a lot of blowouts, and it's pretty tough to watch. And Alabama's up 50 points. That's the problem.
He makes a good point there.
Yeah.
I think the Power 5 teams, I think they should play each other a lot more than they actually are. I understand the part you got to play so many teams.
It's ridiculous.
In your conference.
It's ridiculous.
Right?
You know,
but they get paid. Certain teams, Alabama will go to NASA school and say, okay, listen, I'll give you $1 million if you bring your school over to play us. Okay, fine. Thank you.
Right.
They come in, they get blown out. It's good for the program of the team that gets blown out
because all of a sudden New Mexico is playing Notre Dame, you know.
On television.
And they get paid enough that probably pays for their entire program entire year, right?
That's right.
But, yesterday – we're in the thick of the college season, and I believe there was only two games that involved top 25 teams.
Yep.
Notre Dame and Virginia. Virginia was a good team. I can't remember the other
Wisconsin.
One. Wisconsin and Northwestern?
Northwestern, yeah.
Okay. So I'm saying to myself, you have to create something. You know, you can't have the and I don't know who Alabama did kill Ole Miss yesterday.
Ole Miss.
Yeah, but then that's a conference team, right?
Yeah.
But you gotta have the big boys going head to head all season long, and it's not happening until the end when you're playing in the SEC title game or the Big Ten title game or something like that.
And that hurts also the program because you're not getting enough reps with your first team, and when it comes to crunch, now you're asking everybody to play four full quarters, and they're not adapted to do it because you've only played your first team probably halfway through the third quarter. That's the problem that Alabama had last year. But again, it's whatever teams have the depth, those are the ones that are going to go further. You look at Nick Saban, I think he's got probably six head coaches out there that were assistants under him that grab things from him and bring them out to the schools that they go to. So it really, how can I say it? The kids want to go to a school that they're one, go to the NFL, two, that they're going to play on TV. And three, they're going to compete for a number one job. That's why there's so many transfers right now, is because the kids are realizing, well, there's no way, hope in hell, that I'm going to, if I can say that, that I'm going to get a shot at the number one first string team. I'm going to have to fight for it. And that's what Nick Saban, that's what Sweeney does. That's what Jeremy Pruitt does down in Georgia. It's just that they bring enough depth in to have these kids fight for a job instead of entitlement.
Well, I mean, you might know this. You might know the answer to this more than I do, Naz. Okay, you've got a program in Alabama that, without question, has been the top college program. You guys will suggest of all time. Certainly, the last 10 years
since the Saban got there.
Maybe prior to Alabama in the 90s, it was probably Miami and Florida State. And then when Saban got there,
Florida,
I mean, that it was concentrated in Florida for probably most of the late 80s and 90s. Yeah. And then Alabama and the SEC took over. Not that, you know, the SEC teams have always been at the top of college football. But, Naz, we have college football concentrated in the Southeast United States. Are all the kids from that area?
No,
is Alabama recruiting from all over the
are
kids from Northern California going to LSU or Alabama?
Yes. Yep.
So they're just not attracting local talent. They're attracting talent from all over the United States.
Yeah.
That's correct. Alabama has over 40 players playing in the NFL. 40. That's a lot of players. And of course the kid's going to go to Alabama. A good kid's going to go to Alabama for sure.
And Lou, you always bring up these points. You understand maybe this a little bit better than I do. They rank these players. They call them 4 stars and 5 stars. And they actually rank the recruiting classes.
Yes, they do.
And they rank the recruiting classes based on whether they're recruiting 5 stars are the top of the top. And then I guess the 4 stars are the next level. And all the 5 stars seem to congregate in certain programs.
What happens is there's probably 30 to 35 top 5-star players, and what they do is
per year in all the high schools all across the United States.
I get a list of the 247 composite. They list 300 players. I'd say the top 35 are all 5-star. The rest are all 4-star, and then there's the 3-stars that are still good. And if you can get really a good 3-star to come in and play, it's even better. What happens is most of these kids, you very rarely do you find 2 or 3 of them go, depending on position, to go to one school. So what happens is that they go to most of the schools in the southern U.S. The best ball players come out of Florida. Georgia has been very, very good in bringing out high school kids. You got Mississippi down there.
Tennessee.
You got Louisiana. You got Texas. You got Oklahoma. And you got California. Those are probably the top six or seven states with the most of these players come out of. And they talk to each other a lot. They try to recruit each other a lot. But at the end of the day,
amongst the players themselves, well, they become like professional basketball players.
Well, yeah. but this is in high school.
Yeah,
but they want to go to a program that they're going to get a chance to be a number one starter in their freshman year. Some of them, the elite players, do, and some of them don't. You get to see some guys that are ranked in the top 10 in high school and flop, and then you get a kid that's in the over 250 to 300 or wasn't even rated. To be a 5-star and be a first round pick. And that's their objective at the end of the day, is send me to a coach that's going to develop me to be a first or second round pick.
Anyways, we're going to continue football talk, but we're going to change gears a little bit, Naz. There's something going on down in Western New York that's attracted a little bit of attention amongst us Buffalo Bills fans.
Yeah.
The Bills are 3-0. And although I can't say that they really beat anybody yet, but they got a big one today. Tom Brady and the Pats and Belichick, they're coming into Orchard Park. I don't even remember the name of the stadium anymore.
Is it
New Era?
New Era.
Whatever it's called, but it's in Orchard Park. I know where it is. I've been there. Didn't we go to an Elton John concert there one time?
Yeah, I think we did.
It was Rich Stadium in those days, wasn't it?
Rich Stadium.
Yeah. Do you remember those days, Lou?
I've never been to a football game at in Buffalo.
I've never been to a football game in Buffalo. It's quite an experience.
You never were at a game?
No, never.
Wow. Anyways, no. Let's go back to having introduced that big game down in Buffalo this afternoon. Set it up for us, Ness.
I think it's going to be a defensive struggle, and it's going to be a low scoring game. And I don't know if the Bills have it to win it today, but it'll be close. Their defense is very good, Buffalo's.
How important is
New England down?
Yeah, it's been a long time, seemingly, that we've had, I don't know if you want to call it a buzz about a Buffalo Bills game. I think they've only made the playoffs once since 1999 or something like that.
Once in 19 years.
Once, and that was, what, 2 years ago?
2 years ago,
it was 2 years ago, and they lost to the Jags, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the Bills' history in since the year 2000 hasn't been that great. And now we've got this, and the issue with the Buffalo Bills for the longest time has been quarterback. We haven't had a franchise quarterback in Buffalo since Jim Kelly. I'm not so sure. I mean, I did love Doug Flutie as a quarterback. I think they made a mistake when they replaced him with that other guy. Rob Johnson. I thought that was a mistake. I don't think you can call Doug Flutie a franchise quarterback. He certainly was in the CFL. Can't say you can give him that moniker in the NFL. So the Bills have lacked what successful teams in the NFL need, which is, quite frankly, a franchise quarterback. Josh Allen is showing flashes, and he's got a big test today.
You know who he reminds me of? John Elway. A lot.
Oh, man, you're stretching it there, Ness.
No, his structure is as a quarterback, he reminds me of John Elway, young John Elway.
A young John Elway. Wow. Oh, wow. But how important of a game is this for the Buffalo Bills? They're 7.5-point underdogs. There are various ways they can win this game. They can win this game by scoring more points than the New England Patriots. Although most NFL coaches would disagree with me, there are possibilities of moral victories if they can keep this game close and they can hold their own against the Patriots. Your thoughts on how important a game this is for the Bills?
Very important that they keep it close, and they're 3-0. They could be 3-1 after today. Realistically, New England's unstoppable at the beginning of the year. I think it'll be good if they keep it close. Oh.
Louis, I know you're not a Bills fan.
No, I'm not.
NFL-wise, who's your team?
It used to be the Cleveland Browns, and then they went to Baltimore, and I just forgot about them.
So you lack a rooting interest these days?
Yeah, I do.
So we can bring you over to the Buffalo Bills side?
Yeah, if you want. And you can bring me over to the, was it the Mafia side?
So your impression of the Buffalo Bills so far?
I really liked our defense, obviously with McDermott coming over and bringing that defensive atmosphere or temperature. They've done a great job in playing defense. I think today's game is probably try to keep the game as close as they possibly can. And Josh Allen was one of the top five quarterbacks that I thought coming out of his class. It's just a matter of putting him in the right program. If they can keep it close, and they can, you know, anything can happen then. But I think the defense are going to match up against really well against New England. And we'll just have to wait and see how Brady comes out and see if Edelman's playing.
Everybody talks about this Bills team, or the local buzz on this Bills team is that they have that the strength of the team's in the defense. Tell us a little bit about their defense, Nez. Where are they strong? Which players are potential Pro Bowl players on the Bills defense?
The best player on their defense is Edmonds. He's an unbelievable linebacker, and probably going to be rated top five at the end of this year. He's that good. He's the key to that whole defense. He is a second-year player, and he is very quick and a very good defensive player.
The rest of the defense?
I like their line. The defensive backs are good. The corners are good. They're pretty good defense. But the offense is underrated, too. It's improved a lot. They have Beasley at wide receiver and John Brown, which they didn't have last year. And they have added some speed at the wide receiver position. So it looks good for them today, and they'll keep it close.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto on the new AM 740. In downtown Toronto, we simulcast on 96.7 FM. And on the internet, we live video stream, www.zoomerradio.ca. You can watch us on the internet. There's a fantastic little app for your iPhone and for your Google phone. So if you want to watch us that way, you can do it that way as well. Gentlemen, I notice in that little introduction, some of the wording to our show is, it says, the boys are back. Of course, referring to Naz and I. And that reminded me of a little incident down in Scottsdale, Arizona, that they were talking about and talking about boys and hijinks. We can laugh about it. You know, in some ways, you know, I say that sports more in this Twitter age, in this age of iPhones, in this age of phones Instagram. With cameras yep. and Instagram, sports is really becoming a reality show. So we're, you know, the NFL's in its 100th season, and we've spent half of the time talking about Antonio Brown and some of his hijinks. And we're trying to get ready for the Toronto Maple Leaf season. And we get blindsided. Kyle Dubas gets blindsided. And Austin Matthews gets himself in an incident, an alleged incident, because this is still before the Arizona courts. Apparently, there's a court hearing on October 22nd. He's apparently been charged with disorderly conduct. I don't know what he was thinking. Boys will be boys. I don't think this is, as our prime minister says, this is 2019. That's not something that explains anything anymore. His alleged behavior was something that is improper. I'm not sure it's a criminal charge. I don't think we're talking about criminality, but disorderly conduct. Lou, as a former player, I'm sure you've probably been witness to worse in your day, some of which you probably is protected by the player's code of silence. So we certainly won't ask you to betray any confidence this morning in terms of what may have happened in your day, but your reaction to this incident and from the historical perspective, your thoughts.
It's 2019. That's all I can say. It's more or less this 10, 15, 20 years ago, it would have been washed up under the rug. We as athletes cannot do anything anymore that is inappropriate to the law. I think this incident with Austin Matthews, he was being a kid. I'm not sure how far he went to breaking into the vehicle or wanting to break into the vehicle. It's a misdemeanor. It's probably a slap on the wrist, but it's an eye opener for anybody out there. The thing that I don't like is that he tried to hide it from the Leafs instead of letting them know back in May when it happened, and he got his father involved in it to try to persuade the so-called security guard to keep it under wraps. But again, it just goes to show you that we, even as people, there's really nothing that we can get away with anymore, whether it happens now or whether it happens 10 or 15 years ago. It's going to come out and it's going to bite us.
Naz, your reactions, Wally, to the whole story?
The tapes don't lie. It sounds to me like it happened the way they're saying. It would have been better off if he had just admitted it at the time that it happened and move on, because we do forgive. Our society is a forgiving one. And he would have been forgiven right away. Now he has to go through all of the court cases and everything else. And it's going to be a difficult time for him.
Yeah, I
well,
think.
Especially,
go ahead, Luke.
Yes, especially now that the Leafs are about to name a captain. I think that's going to knock him down a few pegs.
I don't think there's any question about that. And we had that this discussion. Naz, I certainly felt, irrespective of this issue, that Tavares should have been the captain. And we can have... we can have that debate, Lou, from the perspective of a player. Number one, how important And just to wrap up the Auston Matthews debate or discussion, it's not a debate. I couldn't agree with you more. In this day and age, these athletes, doesn't matter how, you know, you sign an $11 million contract. You know what? You can't go out there and act like a teenager. And that may be, that's it. And I don't even want to use that moniker because certain behavior, you don't go around in public in today's day and age, or in, I guess probably in any day and age, and start dropping your pants and start intimidating a woman who's just doing her job. She's out there at 2 o'clock in the morning doing her job as security for the residents that either he lived in or some of his friends lived in. There's a message there. Hopefully it's learned. Hopefully the rest of the players around the league get it. And be careful with your booze. Be careful with the other substance that's now legal in Canada and in a lot of other states. And you know what? And the other lesson in this, you know what? If your buddy, like he's out there with a bunch of buddies that night, right? And if your buddy's making $11 million and he's known around the world, maybe as a friend, you sort of protect them a little bit. If he had been my buddy, I would have been careful what situation I would have exposed him to. I would have made sure he never got to that point.
But again, your buddies are half in the bag also. And yeah. What would have happened? Would he be still getting this kind of notoriety if this happened in Toronto? You don't think the...
If it happened in Toronto, I would think it'd be 500 times worse, wouldn't
you
it?
You think so?
Remember when it happened to Eric Lindros? Do you remember the...
Cuckoo Bananas.
Cuckoo Bananas. That one actually went to trial.
I didn't remember.
Yeah, it was... He was alleged to have poured beer on a woman in a bar. I think it was in Whitby.
In Oshawa?
Yeah. Cuckoo Bananas. He got charged for dumping beer on a woman. And Eric's point was that she dumped beer on him. Went to trial and he got off, or he was acquitted. That's a better proper term. He was acquitted of the charge, so he's never convicted. But that sort of reminded me of that. I think it'd be a hell of a lot worse if it was in Toronto. I really do. You think otherwise, Lou?
I don't know. I don't know what exactly happened. Did he drop his drawers and he still had his underwear on? And did he,
I've read, he dropped his drawers, but he still had his underwear on and he grabbed his cheeks or whatever. Those are the allegations. It's going to court on October 22nd. I got to think that there's going to be some way of plea bargaining that, you know, he's going to settle it. He's going to pay a fine. He's going to do some community service. And hopefully there's a lesson that's been sent to every other athlete in the NHL. Guys, you know what? You're in public. Be careful what you do. You know,
I guess so now.
You know, be careful. Don't resort to this type of behavior. I'm not sure it was ever acceptable, even less acceptable nowadays.
Turn the other cheek,
and I say that with the greatest, you know, we all did stupid stuff when we were younger that, you know, we didn't have camera taping us. We didn't have anybody videoing us. We'd have anybody taping our voices. And maybe from that point of view, we were lucky. A lot of people do stupid things when they're younger that they regret. He did it. He got caught. Hopefully he learns from it and a lesson's been sent to every other young athlete.
Why does it come out 5 months after the fact instead of why didn't it come out right in May?
That's an interesting question you pose, which we will probably find out as this story further develops. And I know the Toronto Maple Leafs must be so upset. And Brian Burke made the comment on one of the shows the other. Just gonna wrap this up. We got to go to break. Brian Burke made the comment on Primetime, I believe this week, is the first phone call you make is to the team. That's the first phone call you make. The second phone call you make is to your parents, and maybe the third one to your agent. Dubas got caught and he got put in an unfair position. And that's probably that may be the bigger mistake that Auston Matthews made here. You know what? You go to your team, you explain it, they're going to help you out. They're not the enemy.
He went to his agent first.
Yeah, and
then he got his dad involved.
Yeah.
Which is the last thing he did.
Whatever. Dubon should have known about it. He should not have been blindsided by the press on that. That was completely unfair to him. Completely unfair to him and to the Toronto Maple Leaf organization.
One more question. If it would have happened to anybody else, where would they be today?
Well, I've got to think the NHL's got to look into this. Yep. They're probably going to wait for the process to work out. I think at some point in time, Austin could be looking at a game or two here. If the NHL wants to send a message, and I think they should.
Time will tell.
You know what? They're accountable for their behavior outside the arena.
It happened to Kuznetsov,
and this falls below the standard that's expected from an NHL player, and I think there has to be consequences, and the message has to be sent.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour this morning the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Joe Bowen. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Morning, guys. How are you today?
Good, Joe. Just to let you know, as usual, my sidekick Naz is here, and Franceschetti found his way down to the studio this morning, so we had to let him in.
There you go. He usually doesn't. If he's not there, he's in the alumni box. The man has a bed in there, I think.
Thanks, Joe.
I'm not saying anything.
Anyways, Joe, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, especially when these two Alabama testosterone crazed guys are in the studio. I need some backup, Joe. I'm the Irish guy here.
The only team that beat a ranked opponent this week is ours. So they're playing pretty well, and I thought they had a good chance to beat Georgia. But we'll wait and see how it all plays out at the end of the year.
It's always a pleasure to get some backup Fighting Irish. But the big story this coming up this week is the season is starting. The Toronto Maple Leaf season starts against the Senators. Hope springs eternal. Everybody's hyped up. We're all trying to get our positions on the parade route down on Bay Street. Joe, you've seen the games. We don't know how important preseason is, but what have you seen in this preseason that you can pass on to our listeners, which would be optimistic?
Well, I think the one thing that you have to be very, very impressed with is the depth of the organization. I think the two Russian kids that they have brought over, especially Mikheyev, are going to be a part of the team and bring with them good size. They're all 6'3 or 6'4. I think they're going to have a real good chance of sticking with this hockey club throughout. Obviously, the core, and it's been well documented how much they're being paid and everything else, is still one that a lot of teams in the National Hockey League are very envious of. But when you send really an American Hockey League lineup that will play and go to Montreal and beat a lineup that has a lot of National Hockey League talent in it, and then similarly do it down in Detroit as well, I think you have to be very impressed with what the Marlies are going to look like this year too. So, I mean, other than, you know, getting off to the slower start against Ottawa with the game in St. John's, but the last run through the eight games have been pretty impressive, especially Frederik Andersen, who's gone, you know, almost three games without giving up a goal. So I think they're going to be fine. The whole idea of it is just get in. Get in somewhere, and if you can have a real good regular season so that you sport home ice advantage, at least in the first round. But the St. Louis Blues showed us that really all you have to do is turn things around and have a good mental approach to the game. Get in, and you never know what might happen.
Joe, does Jason Spezza have a job on this team?
Does he have a job?
Yeah. Is he going to make the team?
Oh, I thought you were asking if he was going to Stelco. I don't know if he has a job. He's hoping to play on this hockey team. I think he has a spot, to be honest with you. I think that his veteran leadership, and I think he's shown enough that he can adjust to the role that he would have to play. So I think he does. It is going to be a very difficult day here today. I'm sure this is the day that the management is really sitting down and the arguments will start. The coaching staff will want someone. The management may want someone else. And then it will end up being really too. Can we put the square peg that costs this much into that round hole over there so that it's going to fit and everything is going to fit? Because sometimes what you want can't be afforded at this particular time. So that will be an interesting kind of byproduct of what has to go on in the meetings that are going on certainly today.
Joe, how's Cody Ceci and Barry fit into the defense here? And are the Leafs going to be as quick as I see they are, or are they going to be quicker?
Well, they're going to be a lot quicker than you were. I think Ceci and Barry fit in very nicely. You didn't notice Tyson Barry maybe early on in the camp and early on in the games, but I certainly noticed him a lot last night. And Ceci seems to have really kind of just blended right in there and done a nice job with Morgan Rielly. So I think both are going to be very capable. I think they both understand their role. They're going to let Ceci's going to let Morgan Rielly just have his way whenever he wants to go. He's going to have to be the guy that kind of tends the fort at the back and make sure everything is tidied up. But I really think that the two of them are going to be key components. Is Tyson Barry better than Jake Gardner? Well, we're going to find out. He's certainly a terrific skater the way Jake was as well. But he's got magnificent hockey sense, and it'll be interesting to see how he runs the second power play unit as well.
Talking to Joe Bowen. Joe, you've put me in the unenviable position to coming to Franceschetti's defense. It would be a first time event that ever happened on this show. Joe,
you think he was quicker?
No, I don't think he was quicker. But this team may lack a skill set that Franceschetti actually brought to some of the teams that he played.
He
spent 11, 12 years. He managed to survive. He did bring a little bit of grit, and he was sort of a lunch pail type of guy, and he would go into the corners and he'd elbow his way around to the front of the net. So he did bring a certain skill set
on a very low salary too.
and he managed to hang around for a long time.
Yeah. Those skill sets were very affordable.
They were, but it's also a skill set that some people are suggesting is lacking from this Toronto Maple Leaf team. And quotation marks toughness. We always come back. Is this team better? Yeah, they seem faster. They've got a great top six. We've got some guys on the point now that can shoot right. But one of the criticisms over the last couple of years has been lack of sandpaper and lack of toughness. Is that still an issue, Joe?
Not according to the coach. Some of the other people, possibly. I don't, the game is changing. Really is. And whether you believe that or not, I'm a little more old school, and I probably agree with you. But I mean, how many fights are there? That's not a skill set that's required anymore.
Not so much the
skill set. Yeah. And I understand what you mean. I mean, and it's the pushback, kind of thing that Nazem Kadri, was criticized for and subsequently traded because, so the other aspect of it, I think the two big Russians will add to this, is that their size is something that I think the Leafs need as well. Whether they're a pushback kind of a player, I doubt that they are, but they very well may be. But we haven't seen it yet. But the other aspect of it is, I mean, your pushback can also be your courage. If you're not going to be intimidated and you're not going to be pushed around and intimidated by changing your game because of that, then it really doesn't matter. But, that's where people see the game changing. And us dinosaurs, and I'll put Louie in that department as well.
Well, we're all in that department.
The game was different then. And yes, you did. And trust me, we talked about it during the preseason, that after the first four games, there wasn't so much as even a pusher or anything. I said, back in the 80s, there'd have been seven fights up to this point. And Wendell Clark would have probably been in five of them. So it's changed. It really has. And it's changed for the better health of the players overall, I suppose. If not, it hasn't changed maybe, or it has changed for the way some of us used to enjoy watching the sport. And I always said I really enjoyed the fights as long as I wasn't in one. So that's where, you know, us dinosaurs have to kind of say, hey, well, you know what? It is changing. And maybe they don't need the Ben Harper to be there to be tapped on the shoulder. So that's where it is. And we'll see.
Joe, your thoughts on the play of Rasmus Sandin so far?
I'm very impressed with him. The issue that may come up is the monetary issue. Can we bring him up and burn a year and then the salary cap? Or is there an issue where we could keep someone and he could go and play another year in the American Hockey League and play extraordinarily well, and it's certainly wouldn't hurt him by any stretch of the imagination to play 30 and 40 minutes a night almost at the American Hockey League level. But he's very, very close. Now, you think back to other past years, and there was Borgman, and everybody, oh, yeah, he's ready to go. He's ready to go. Well, in a month later, he ain't here. So they have to be careful with him. I think they have to be err on the side of caution. He's just 19, so let's not force him into a situation unless he is forcing us to make that decision. And that will be another big hot topic to be discussed in the boardroom today. But you'd love to be a fly on the wall because it's going to be very interesting, and there'll be a lot of different points of view on it. And then monetarily wise, it'll be another decision to have to be made there.
Joe, one last question, and we'll let you get on with your day. And thank you so much for joining us. We've talked about all the additions that guys are going to be skating around, all the new guys on the ice. There may be an addition that may be even more valuable than that. We'll see how time plays out. Paul McFarland, behind the bench, I think was brought in for a couple of specific reasons. One, probably the power play more so than anything else. Your impressions of what impact he has had on the team so far and what impact he may have on a go-forward basis?
Well, make no mistake that when practice is on, it's the head coach who is looking after everything, and Mike Babcock has his tentacles and hands on everything. Now, Paul will tweak and do some different things, and I think we were commenting last night that we saw some different things in the power play, and it was quite successful, by the way, last night as well. More net front presence, more side, like the Mikhaev had done a wonderful job in front of the net on a couple of opportunities. So more net front presence. It's not as predictable as it was a year ago at this point anyway. I mean, now Marner's but on the left side, as opposed to being on the right side last year. So I think we're seeing some different approach to it. Tyson Barrie will add a dimension that maybe the Leafs didn't have, and that is a pretty good point shot on the second group. So I think we're seeing some tweaks to it. But when John Tavares is going to live off the crease, and he's going to live very, very richly on this power play, one would think. Austin Matthews with that wrist shot is going to, you know, benefit greatly from Mitch Marner. I think we're going to see some things like that. And I think what we're going to see is that it's not going to be as predictable as it got last year. And I think that will be an important aspect that teams are going to have to wonder what's going on. And Paul McFarland will be a big part of that.
We've been talking to Joe. Joe, you know how much we appreciate your time, and Naz and I, we're trying to hang in. We want to see the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup, and even more importantly, we want to listen to it, listen to your call when the Leafs win the Stanley Cup, and hopefully it'll be this year. Anyways.
Well, let's just get into the damn final, and we'll worry about it then.
Listen, Joe.
Let's get out of the first round.
Have a fantastic season. We'll be listening. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Always a pleasure. Joe Bowen. Lou, I want to go back to a topic we discussed very briefly, the question of captaincy. And we were talking about captaincy with the Washington Capitals. How important is it for the Leafs to choose the right captain? Or how much difference does it make whether it's Austin Matthews, John Tavares, or Morgan Rielly? From the perspective of one of the players being in the room with the guy who's wearing the C.
Well, I think you gotta remember this is probably one of the most iconic franchises in all of sports. So it's very important to get the right guy. Dion Phaneuf was not the right guy to be the captain here when he got
Why? Nominated. Why?
I just think I didn't think he came with the proper leadership qualities from Calgary. Brian Burke anointed him as soon as he got here without knowing the type of player he was in the dressing room, the respect that you get from other players in the dressing room.
I'm sorry to interrupt here because we've only got a few minutes left, I'm really interested in your perspective on this as a former player. It's almost like I get the sense that, okay, management is appointing a captain. But the players know who the captain is, don't they? They know who the leader is on the team. Does management know? Because I didn't get any sense whatsoever. We were 2 weeks ago. We're on the show. We're all talking about Austin Matthews going to be the captain. They were out in Newfoundland. They're all wearing Austin Matthews jerseys with C on. 2 weeks later, it's like the world changed, spinned on its axis. And I'm not surprised because I thought John Tavares, who was a captain with the New York Islanders, seems to be projecting more leadership qualities than Austin Matthews. What's your perspective?
Or Morgan Rielly.
Or Morgan Rielly. I think Rielly would be a great captain. Right. I didn't think Matthews is ready for it.
I don't think he's ready for it either. And it's got nothing to do with his background. I just don't.
Irrespective of what happened this week.
We're not disrespecting him as a player. I don't know what kind of leader he is in that dressing room. Will he sit down and will somebody look up to him and say, okay, well, you're doing it the right way? We had Rod Langway. Rod Langway never said a word. He just led by example. He worked his asses off. As many bad habits as he had, he was always the first one in the dressing room every morning at practice, riding the bike. But right now, I think it's either John Tavares because of the title that he had with the Islanders. The people, the kids are going to look up to him. They were going to respect him, even the younger kids, or Morgan Rielly. Now you got to look at how much term do these guys have left. Morgan Rielly's got 3 years left in his contract. Tavares has got six. You're not going to put one guy in there just for 1 or 2 years, even though Matthews does have another 4 or 5 years left.
Naz, your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think John Tavares, right from the beginning, I said that he should have been captain. He should have been captain last year. There's no reason why he shouldn't be. He's the leader of the team, and you can tell him in the interviews.
He seems to be.
It's one and one A with Morgan Rielly and John Tavares.
How much difference does a captain make? Like, what's the function of a captain? Is he a rallying point for the team? Does he sit? You know, is he on people's asses when they're dogging it? Is he the conduit between the players and management? How important is a captain in an NHL dressing room? Does it make any difference?
There's 30 different captains because you have 30 different personalities. You got Brendan Gallagher out in Montreal, even though he's not a captain. The way he leads by example. Shane Weber leads by example. Then there's other guys that are a little bit more feistier, that get in your face, that more or less play really, really hard emotionally, where some guys are a lot more laid back and let their actions speak. They'll pull a guy aside and listen, this is what has to be done because of the organization. Some guys just walk into a room, and the aura of him walking into a room
They command respect.
They command respect.
Yeah.
So it's 30 different organizations, or 31 different organizations have 31 different types of captains.
To me, I obviously never played professional sports like you did, Lou, but, you know, Naz and I played some sports when we were younger, and, you know, the captain generally was on the teams that we played is like he's the guy that everybody respects. Doesn't have to be the best player on the team.
It doesn't have to be the best player.
Right? Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's the best player on the team, because a lot of times the best player on the team is also the hardest working player on the team. Like a guy like Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, there's a reason why Sidney Crosby is the best player in the universe, or him and Connor McDavid, because he works harder than everybody else.
That's why Babcock has a tough time looking down the bench there and looking for a Lidstrom, Datsun, or a Zetterberg.
I mean, these guys are unassailable. It's just the respect they command. And yeah. Tavares, to me, and Riley, more or less the same. I see Tavares a little bit further. It's just like,
because he is 29 years old. He's been through it before.
And he's done it before. Yeah. And he's done everything. He was, I believe I'd have to go back and check. Was he not captain of the Team Canada junior team? May have been, was certainly a leader on the Team Canada junior team when, you know, he was in the Olympics in 2014, got hurt. He just seems, he gives me the aura of commanding respect. Just that's my sense
Louis,
of him.
Louis, does it mean more to be the captain of the Leafs than anywhere else? Like Philadelphia or Pittsburgh?
10 seconds, Lou.
Yes and no. Toronto, Montreal, Chicago, New York, Detroit.
Original six teams.
Original six teams.
Anyways, we're going to have to let it go at that. Naz, 5 seconds, last word.
Go Bills.
Go Bills. I knew you were going to say that. To all our listeners, have a fantastic week. We'll be back again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.